Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that it's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, but please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us Senator Tom McClintock, and he is a state senator here in California. He's been up there in the legislature fighting for our individual freedom for many years. He's now running for the position of state controller, which most people don't even know what that is, but it's said that that is the second most important job in the state. In fact, it even may be the most important job in the state. Thank you very much for being with us today, Senator.
No, Stan, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right, why don't you just tell us, well, as long as we mention the state controller, what does the state controller do?
Well, you're right. We all have to think of it as this ministerial backwater because the controller's office has not been used the way the state envisioned in 50 years. But it is designed to be the watchdog of the state treasury. As state controller Tom Kuchel said 50 years ago, it's the necessary independent check on the spending of the government. It has absolute authority to audit state expenditures. It will decide the majority on both of the tax agencies of the state. It could mean Republican majorities on both the tax agencies for the first time since 1958. And with that, a very big change in the entire attitude of the tax collectors of California.
All right, fine. And, of course, if you're interested in knowing more, you can go to Senator McClintock's site. It's simply on the web, tommcclintock.com. That's M-C-C-L-I-N-T-O-C-K, McClintock.com. And, of course, that's his website for his campaign. And, of course, believe me, they're going to spend a lot of money to try to keep that in the hands of the corrupt people who today control it. Well, a lot of things are going on there in Sacramento, and I think this is important to people far beyond the state of California, because as California goes, so goes the nation. California is the fifth or sixth largest economy in the entire world. If we were an independent state, we would be the sixth largest economy behind perhaps Japan and Germany and the United States. And I'm not sure whether we exceed China at the present time, but there are not very many countries that could even begin to compare with this state we're in. So what happens here is going to affect the rest of the country, indeed the rest of the world. So what's happening? I understand we got some budget problems up there in Sacramento, and they're just simply the Democrats are going to insist on raising taxes.
Well, that's putting it mildly. This administration, the state budget is just four votes away from going to the governor. And if it gets to the governor, he said he's going to sign it. He's been pushing for this. It means your car taxes are going to more than double. It means the average a burden on a family is going to increase about $700 next year. It's the second biggest tax increase in the history of California, all to cover the gross mismanagement of this state's resources. We went from a $9 billion projected surplus last year to a $23.5 billion deficit this year. And we got there the old-fashioned way by spending every dime in sight and making no provision for efficiency and making no provisions for the an economic downturn. So when that economic downturn came, we now have a record budget deficit that this administration wants to plug with the second biggest tax increase in American history. If you were paying $200 to the DMV last year for your car taxes, you'll be paying $500 next year if this regime stays in power and if we don't bring this spending back under control. We saw the state budget under the first 3 years of this administration grow 37%. While the population grew just 5%. And you know, that opens the obvious question, have you seen a 37% increase in highway construction or school construction or academic performance or or anything other than your electricity bill and the size of the state's bureaucracy.
Well, now what's going to happen to our electricity bills? Because the state, certainly squandered all of this money, simply transferred it to Enron and Dynergy and of course, Duke Power and all of these major corporations. Who's going to end up paying for what this Governor Davis did? I understand that he signed long-term contracts averaging something like $85 a megawatt, what it should be. I talked to the man in charge. He said it should be somewhere between $10 and $30 a megawatt. So he signed these long-term contracts. Why would he do something like that when he wouldn't allow the PG&E and Southern Edison to sign long-range contracts?
Because of gross conflicts of interest, pure and old-fashioned corruption, and unbelievable mismanagement. Here's what happened. He appointed a man by the name of Vikram Budraja to go in and negotiate energy contracts for the purpose of keeping Edison and the other utilities out of bankruptcy. It turns out, first of all, they negotiated those contracts in direct violation of the State Open Meetings Act, the State Open Records Act, and his negotiators refused even to conform to the Fair Political Practices Act that requires them to disclose their financial interests. It turns out, after they were ordered to file those reports, that Budraja was getting over $100,000 a year under the table from Southern California Edison's parent company. At the same time, he was negotiating contracts for the express purpose of keeping Edison out of bankruptcy.
Isn't that a conflict of interest?
It's not only a conflict of interest. Under the government code of California, it voids the contract. We've had to go into Superior Court in Los Angeles. We are seeking to void those contracts based on the government code's prohibition against exactly that kind of behavior. The administration could get us out of those contracts simply by stipulating to what everybody knows, that Budraja was getting money from Edison, that money constituted a significant portion of his income, and that he was involved in negotiations of contracts, the declared purpose of which was to keep Edison out of bankruptcy. Those are all facts that are known to everyone. If the administration simply stipulated to that, those contracts would be voided tomorrow. But they won't. And they won't because of an unbelievable level of simple incompetence and corruption. We saw the same thing with the Oracle computer contract, $100 million. To buy more computer software than the state has employees.
All right, we're going to have to break just for a moment here, and right now we want to mention to our listeners about some of the items that we carry. One of them, of course, is the Phonopoly set, and this simply is a reading program that will teach your children, your grandchildren, how to read phonetically, how to spell phonetically, and how to, of course, to pronounce words phonetically. It's not one game, it's five board games, two bonus games, and we throw in a couple of books with this. And basically, the game is played like Monopoly. But in the process, the child learns to reorient their mind and begin to sound out the words, to learn the 40 basic sounds of the English language, to learn the 12 basic rules of when an A is pronounced A and when it's pronounced aw, and when an E is pronounced E and whether it's pronounced A. And all of these things are very, very straightforward. It's a wonderful program. I've played it. I even learned something at 73. We hope that you'll want to get the Phonopoly set. Give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we also carry the Oregon curriculum, or Dr. Robinson's curriculum, by which he educated his children from the first grade to the 12th grade, and his two sons went right into the third year of college, actually, that will give excellence in education. You get the tests, you get the textbooks, and it's all on computer disks. And then, of course, you get the lesson plans, how this whole thing is laid out. And it's on 22 discs, and you simply print them down. You don't let the children print them down because you don't want them spending their time on computers. You want them learning. And they'll learn to read, they'll learn to think, they'll learn math and calculus and all of these things. The only books you have to buy are the Saxon textbooks. Saxon textbooks. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Now. Well, if there's any one tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest today is Senator Tom McClintock, and he's driving to San Francisco. He's on a cell phone, but we're glad to have him with us. Our telephone number is, of course, 1-888-24-LIBERTY out across America, or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. And Senator McClintock, you were talking about the computer software that they bought for $100 million that should have cost them how much?
Well, they shouldn't have bought it at all, frankly. I mean, they only had a handful of, I think it was three agencies out of over 100 that were surveyed that even said they had any use for the stuff. They actually bought more licenses than the state has employees. Now, you wonder how any of that could happen. Well, during hearings before the legislature, it seems that nobody in that administration knew how that happened. But we do know that a $25,000 campaign contribution was handed to an official of the administration from the spokesman for Oracle, the lobbyist for Oracle, days after that contract was rushed through over the unanimous opposition of all of the fiscal checks within the state's government.
Well, now, my understanding is that was $100 million that Oracle got, and you mean to tell me they were so cheap they only gave the governor $25,000? Well, I would think he would have been highly offended at that.
Well, he wasn't. And you know, that's what really is sickening about this administration. We have had incompetent governors before, and we've survived them. I don't believe we have ever, in the history of California, had an administration that has had a tapestry of scandals and conflicts of interest from the outset. And the result has been horrendous decisions that the taxpayers are now paying for. You're paying for it as an electricity consumer, the gross conflicts of interest of the governor's appointees in negotiating those contracts. You're paying it as a taxpayer, again, as I said, the second highest tax increase in the state's history, about to be imposed if this budget gets to his desk. And the good news about all that is we don't have to go another 4 years down this road. There is an election in 109 days. We don't have to continue down this road. And that's a discussion all of us have to have as citizens. We've got to go to our friends and neighbors, particularly those who may have voted for this administration 4 years ago, and ask them, can you really afford another 37% increase in state spending at your expense with nothing to show for it? Can you really afford another 40% increase in your electricity bill to pay for this administration's conflicts of interest? Can you really afford to continue to pay the third heaviest highway taxes in the country to an administration that refuses to build highways? Those are very important questions. I don't believe we've had a more important election in this state in my lifetime.
Well, I agree with you. I think that, and I do enjoy those ads that we've been seeing running about the two cleaning ladies going into supposedly the governor's office, and there's money. Every place they look, there's money, big piles of money. And I think that that, I hope, will be shown over and over again, because it certainly makes the point. But then, of course, the media is really out to get a Bill Simon for this, that, and the other thing, to try anything they can to simply, to discredit him. On the other hand, they seem, many of the major media, seem to be playing softball with the governor and some of these gross things that are happening. If you sign an illegal contract with somebody and take a campaign contribution, I don't know how anybody could say that this is not, of course, payment for services rendered. Aren't there any rules against that sort of thing?
Oh, yes, there are very good laws against them, but unfortunately they have to be enforced by the Attorney General, and this Attorney General has proven himself to be a lapdog for the administration. Fortunately, we do have other agencies, and I certainly hope that they are looking into it, particularly the Oracle computer scandal. I mean, the legislature found gross misconduct during the Joint Legislative Audit Committee hearing. Those committee hearings, by the way, were chaired by a Democrat, Assemblyman Dean Flores. He did a courageous job. He placed his duty to the people of California, to the Constitution, ahead of his partisan role in the legislature. He conducted a thorough inquiry, and his reward for taking a principled and nonpartisan stand was to be kicked off that committee by the Democratic Party leaders. Now, that's a big change from the days of Harry Truman. I remember Harry Truman in a speech saying, you know, he hated all corruption, but he particularly hated Democratic corruption, he said, because that tainted everything that they were trying to do. What a huge change in that party over the last 50 years.
Amen to that. Well, tell us about what's happening in education here in California, because, I mean, we're putting out, 53 or 54% of our massive budget on education, and I don't think we're getting our money's worth.
Of course we're not, Sam. We're actually counting all sources, local, state, and federal. We are putting in over $9,200 for every child in the California public schools. That means that a classroom of 30 students is being back at the top with over $270,000 of public resources. Now, I've got two kids in the public schools. I can guarantee you only a fraction of that money is actually getting into the classroom to educate the kids. The rest of it is being absorbed by one level of bureaucracy after another before it ever reaches the kids. I had a very simple proposal that simply asked for an accounting of how much is going into the classroom and how much is not going into the classroom at every level. Not forcing anybody to do anything, just asking the school districts, the individual schools, the county offices of education, simply give an accounting to the taxpayers how much is going into the classroom, through instruction, material, facility, and how much is it? How much is being spent for your bureaucracy? The Democrats killed that on a straight party line vote. And according to Democrat Senator Betty Barnett, that would just be much too much trouble to keep track of. Now, bear in mind, it's not too much trouble for them to write and cash the checks. It's just too much trouble to keep track of where it's going. That's what is wrong with this entire incompetent regime, and that's why a thorough political house cleaning is absolutely essential. We can't go another 4 years down this road.
Well, I certainly agree with you. The polls look fairly good at the present time for Bill Simon. Do you think they're accurate? Where does he stand? My concern is that even though he's somewhat ahead of Davis at the present time, we know that when the media gangs up on you, they can make the Pope look terrible if they wanted to.
Well, first of all, I think the media has been very fair. They've been very tough on both sides, but I think they've been overall very fair. The interesting thing is this. Davis spent several millions of dollars on a series of attack ads on Bill Simon. And what happened? Bill Simon rose another 10 points in the poll. Now, that should tell us something. I think the public is focusing on these issues much sooner in this election cycle than they have in the past. I think that the public's beginning to realize that this regime has put the government of California up for sale to the highest bidder, that this regime has cost their families an enormous amount, that this regime is about to more than double your family's car tax. As I said earlier, if you paid $200 for your car last year to the DMV, you'll be paying $500 next year if this administration has its way. And I think they're responding. I remember over the 4th of July holiday, I was watching a dramatization of the battles of Lexington and Concord. And after the British blew through the local militia at Lexington, word spread throughout the countryside. And by the afternoon, as they were marching back from Concord, farmers from throughout the region had gathered on the road. They grabbed their muskets off the mantles and decided to fight for their freedom. And I think we're seeing the civic equivalent of that. I think we're seeing a lot of folks who've not been engaged in politics before, who don't pay a lot of attention to politics until the last couple of weeks of the election. I think they're starting to realize that their future in California, their ability to prosper, to raise their families, to make a go of it in California, is now directly threatened by this administration. And it's high taxes, it's outrageous and outlandish regulations, and the general level of corruption that we have seen in case after case after case.
Now, what is this?
And they're forming an opinion early, and that opinion is, we don't want to do another 4 years of this.
Well, I certainly hope you're right. We'll ask our callers out there to give us a call at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. What is this about the administration wanting to allow people who are here illegally to get cheaper college tuition? Why would we be encouraging people who are in this country illegally, and why would they get cheaper college tuition than, say, American citizens from Nevada?
Well, that's a very good question, and frankly, Stan, I don't have an answer for it. I am baffled by that, too. The lesson is, we get the government we vote for. We voted in the most liberal regime, certainly in the history of this state, possibly the most liberal regime in the country, and you end up getting laws like that. And what you said is absolutely right. An American citizen in Arizona who wants to get an education in California has to pay an out-of-state tuition, has to pay tuition at a much, much higher level. But someone who's in this country illegally gets a discounted education, same rate as a citizen of California. Now, that is nuts.
Well, I think there are a lot of crazy things going on. Right now we're going to have to take another break, and this is the time when I want to tell our listeners that Radio Liberty carries Miracle 2 soap products, and we think that they're very, very effective. One thing we'll say is they're excellent soap. Now, a lot of people make a lot of claims for them. Of course, the Federal Drug Administration has not said this has any medicinal quality, although many of our listeners claim that it's helped their rashes and helped many of the other things that they've had. The products are soap, a moisturizing soap, a lotion, a gel, and a neutralizer. Some people say if you drink the neutralizer, it'll tend to help your heartburn. I know my wife uses it. She's very happy with it. All we can do is tell you what people have said about it. We cannot make medicinal claims, but we hope that many of you will want to try the products. I will tell you that a day doesn't go by where we don't get 3 or 4 repeat orders from people who've had the product, like the product. And so if you'd like to get more information, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-544-8927, or even better, we hope that many of you will actually want to buy an introductory set of these 5 products, and you do that by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we hope many of you will want to change your long-distance carrier to Promise Vision. The number there, 866-448-5631. That's 866-448-5631. Rates are good, service is excellent, and we get 15% of your what you put in. Call right now.
A very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991. It tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working within organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background to this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
Well, Dr. Stan back here, our guest is Senator Tom McClintock, and we're basically talking about what's going on here in California, about the upcoming elections, about the fact that he is running for comptroller, which is really either the most or the second most important job in the state. And if you'd like to learn more about that, you can go to his website at tommcclintock.com. And I know Tom was a very good, Senator McClintock was a very good friend of Eric Seastrand, who, of course, was very close to us when before he died. He was the whip there in the Republican Assembly and a great patriot, and he always spoke so well of Senator McClintock. Of course, at that time, he was Assemblyman McClintock. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, our telephone number, 464-8295, or here in the Central Coast of California, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or just the opposite, out across America, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast, 464-8295. But if you have a question for the senator, would love to hear from you, because, of course, this is so important that people understand what's going on. And, of course, we've been talking about the education, the lack of education in our schools. What about the content of our education? Senator, this is the thing that really disturbs me, is I don't think that the children are learning what they should be learning in public schools.
Well, I think there's some truth to that. I mean, it used to be that these schools were ultimately answerable to the parents through the local school boards. But as we went through the 70s and 80s, that discretion was taken away from local school boards, taken away from parents, and now parents have very little say in really anything about their child's education. They've got very little say in what teacher their child is assigned. They got very little say in the methods of instruction or the quality of instruction. And it didn't used to be like that. It used to be a parent could complain to the principal and would get action. That doesn't happen anymore because principal's hands are tied.
All right, fine. Well, of course, I think our schools are in a sad state. I know that, of course, Governor Davis ran as the education governor, and he said that, you know, if our tests weren't up, our student scores weren't up, why, of course, he shouldn't be elected. Well, my understanding is they've been dumbing down the tests so the tests will look better. What's the truth about the tests? Are the students doing better in schools? Are they really getting the phonics he promised us?
My understanding is we are still despite massive increases in spending over the last few years, we're still at the very bottom in most of our test scores.
Well, I think that, this is the only way we have of knowing, comparing what our students do with other students. And, you know, I think we're down around Louisiana and Mississippi. And of course, American students really are compared with other countries, are at the bottom. So California is at the bottom of the country, and our country is at the bottom of the world. What does that tell about what we're doing to the minds of our children?
Well, all you have to do is go right across the state line to Arizona, and you'll begin to get a feel for the difference between a well-managed state and what California has become. In Arizona, they spend significantly less per pupil for their public schools than we spend here in California, and yet they significantly outperform us in every measure of academic achievement. They suffer blistering summer heat every single summer, but they've got no electricity shortage. They pay a fraction for their electricity, what we pay here in California. They have had three times the rate of population growth as we've had in this state, and yet they have abundant affordable housing at every income level. They have one of the finest highway systems in the country. Now, Arizona, to do all that, spends $1,800 for every man, woman, and child in Arizona. California spends $3,000 under Greg Davis and delivers diddly squat.
Well, now, what about our our highways, because certainly they collect an awful lot of money for our roads. Are they investing this? What are they doing with all that money?
No, in fact, the governor's budget sweeps another two-thirds of $1 billion out of the state highway account and into the general fund to pay for his deficit. Now, they say, don't worry, no highway projects are going to be delayed. Well, of course there are no highway projects that are going to be delayed. There aren't any highway projects. This administration, last year, this governor, proudly proclaimed that the era of freeway construction in California was over. Now, this at a time when we have seen a 30% increase in the miles driven by Californians over the last 10 years, while the lane capacity of this state's highway system has increased 1%. You remember when they doubled the excise tax on gasoline back in 1990? They promised that money was going to be used for road construction. It hasn't. And the result is, and as I said, we have an administration whose declared policy is not to build freeways. Despite the third heaviest taxes per vehicle in the country, we are dead last in our per capita spending for our roads.
Now, why aren't we building freeways? Certainly we need freeways. Nobody likes them, but if you don't have the freeways, you have just chaos on the highways.
We desperately need freeways. Again, we've not expanded the system in 30 years, but it's been the declared policy of this administration, and the policy's gotten a lot worse under this administration. And it's because of an ideological objection to the automobile. But I'll tell you something. A gridlock car creates twice the NOx contaminants and six times the carbon contaminants as a car moving at peak efficiency per mile traveled. So you open up the freeways, you'll have the environmental equivalent of removing half the cars on the roads for NOx, five out of six cars on the road for carbon contaminants, and it's not as if we don't have the money to do it. You look down, for example, at Los Angeles, just for the mass transit subsidies they put into the Los Angeles MTA, just for the subsidy payment, we could add four new lanes to the most gridlocked portions of that freeway system every year, just for a 10-mile span of road, just for the savings from the mass transit subsidies. Remember, the LA MTA had a strike last year. A 32-day strike, there was no appreciable increase in highway congestion. There was actually a decrease in air pollution. They had a strike. Nobody noticed. But what they're gobbling up is the equivalent of adding four new lanes of angioplasty, the most congested routes in Los Angeles, 10 miles a year.
All right. Now, what about this new legislation? I think it was AB 1493. And that was, of course, going to give the Air Control Board a really carte blanche to do whatever they wanted to. Massive increase of automobile taxes on SUVs and increasing gasoline taxes as much as they wanted, and everything just to cut down supposedly on greenhouse emissions, which of course is a scam being used to increase government control over our lives. But what are the implications of that legislation?
Well, the implications are, say, it's a blank check authority to the Air Resources Board to do whatever the Air Resources Board wants to do to discourage people from driving. There are certain exceptions that they build into it because of the public outcry of objection to the earlier version of the bill. But the bottom line is, it gives the California Air Resources Board the ability to pile huge fees the next time you try to get your tires rotated or changed, the next time you try to get your driver's license renewed, and places draconian emissions requirements that will make it virtually impossible to get a new car or for that matter, to hang on to your old one when it goes into effect in a few years. Now, all of this is because what you said, greenhouse gases. Let's be clear what they're actually talking about. They're talking about carbon dioxide. They are talking about the same thing that every living creature on this planet exhales with every breath. They're talking about gas, carbon dioxide, that is absolutely essential to plant life on this Earth. That's what they're using as an excuse to impose these draconian requirements. And the fact of the matter is, if we shut down every internal combustion engine in California and went all the way back to the days of the horse and buggy, we would reduce carbon dioxide emissions 0.1% globally.
Well, you know, carbon dioxide, there isn't that much in the atmosphere ordinarily. You know, the major greenhouse gas is water vapor. I mean, that is what the, and are they going to outlaw that next?
Well, as you pointed out, I don't think it has to do with the environment. I mean, the environmental effect is so minuscule and, for that matter, so debatable. I really don't think that's what it's about. I think it is about this radical retrograde ideology that basically wants to move everybody out of the automobile and onto the mass transit system, which is the government can manipulate and control.
And of course, they really want to control where we live, where we work, where we buy our things. In fact, if you go to Stevens Creek in San Jose, you'll see these new sustainable high rises going up all along Stevens Creek Boulevard. And you live on the top floor, you work on the second floor, and you buy on the first floor. Why, you won't even need a car.
Mm-hmm. And the only problem with that is that people don't like to live in dense urban cores. Most people like to have a yard where their kids can play. They like to have a little elbow room. That is why they brave hours of traffic congestion in our gridlock roads. Now, either the government can recognize that desire and work to meet those needs, or it can ignore that desire and destroy our quality of life in California.
But that's exactly what they intend to do. I mean, they have their agenda. They're going to carry it out whether we want it or not. And once you've given carte blanche to a bunch of bureaucrats who are answerable to nobody, the whole idea of representative government is gone. And has that the governor signed that incredible legislation yet?
Well, actually, he has announced that he will be signing it on, I believe, Monday. So your folks at this point, you know, who object to this kind of draconian and pointless overregulation of our basic, you know, right to get around, have got to look to the ballot box as the only recourse. You're not, you know, words have become vain with this administration. At some point, we've got to ask ourselves, can we really afford another 4 years of these policies? That's what the election's all about. And as I said, I think it's the most important election that we've had, certainly in my lifetime and probably in the 151-year history of California.
Well, I tend to agree with you very much. And the only question is, are there enough people now who will commit themselves? And we just have to hope and pray and do everything we can to make them understand that these people have a plan. They have an agenda. It's all written out in the sustainable development syllabus we offer. But it comes from something called the Global Biodiversity Assessment, 1,142-page book. Came out of the Second Earth Summit. And it's all laid out there, exactly what they're going to do.
Well, I think it's more basic than that. I think it really goes back to the small is beautiful era of limits. That's right. The Jerry Brown administration introduced this retrograde ideology in California public policy. Up until that point, this state, under Democratic and Republican administrations, was committed to providing for the needs that are caused by growth. We were building highways faster than Detroit was building cars. We were building the state water project to provide for the greening of all of California. We were building power plants to meet this generation's electricity needs. We were doing all of the things that needed to be done to provide for a superior quality of life for the people of California. And in 1974, we got this retrograde ideology. It was basically this: if we stop building things, people won't come. So we stopped building highways, we stopped building water systems, we stopped building electricity plants, we stopped building schools, we stopped people from building houses, and folks came anyway. And now we're dealing with gridlock highways and the constant threat of power blackouts. We live in fear of the next drought. We've got a housing crisis that has boosted housing out of the reach of most California families. All of that in the name of small is beautiful, era of limits, don't build things and people won't come. this administration is the absolute culmination of that lunacy.
All right, I'm going to have to interrupt you there, Senator, because we've got to take a quick break here, and this is the time I want to mention that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we hope many of you out there will decide that you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. It's as simple as picking up your telephone and calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and for a suggested gift of at least $20 a month or more, as much as you can afford, you'll get our four best tapes of the month, you'll get our monthly newsletter, but more than that, you'll be helping us do what we do, and that is reach out across America 5 hours every day on radio, on shortwave, on satellite, on the internet. You can get our programs 5 hours a day on the internet, 2 hours a day on shortwave. Give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us reach America with the truth.
Have you ever wondered about the boys we left behind in Vietnam, in Korea? Did you ever know that we left 25,000 American boys behind in Russia, in Siberia at the end of the Second World War? Have you ever wondered what really happened at Oklahoma City, what really happened with TWA 800 that went down off the eastern coast about a year ago? Well, ladies and gentlemen, all of the subjects are well covered in a fascinating book by Craig Roberts entitled The Medusa File. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, order The Medusa File. Actually, Craig Roberts was a police officer working on the Oklahoma City bombing. Now, this book has been suppressed very effectively across America. It's self-published, but I promise you that there's no other book I know that will give you more contemporary history, frightening history that every American needs to know. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Senator Tom McClintock, and we're just talking about the tragic situation of our state. And I've lived here in California all my life. I've gone to other countries to live, and lived in Europe and lived in South Africa. But I always come home because Santa Cruz, pardon me, and where I live is home, and California is my home. But there are a group of people who seem to be intent upon changing California. They have a different vision of the world. And as Senator McClintock has said, it's small is beautiful. Restrict everything. Try to create control by just not building highways, not building dams, not building electric plants. And of course, it goes along with something, a book that came out in 1972 called The Limits of Growth by the Club of Rome. Are you acquainted with that at all, Senator?
No.
Well, this was put out, this was sort of their plan, and so much of what's happened since then in sustainable development really, of course, came out of the limits of growth philosophy. So what can the average individual do? If they put through this legislation, now nothing's going to happen up until, what, 2009? How will this impact on us in the coming years?
Well, what you're going to see is substantial increases in the price of automobiles. You'll see a reduction in the choices that you'll have available to you. And once that's in place, I think you will also see restrictions on emissions to the point where it'll be real hard to get your automobile registration renewed. I think you'll see huge fee increases for replacing your tires, replacing your motor oil. Again, this is literally a blank check of authority to the California Air Resources Board with a mandate to adopt whatever regulations they deem necessary to discourage driving.
Well, now, will this impact on us before the year 2009?
I think as we get closer to that, if this lunacy hasn't been repealed by then, and I think it will be repealed, I think the public is very much aware of this legislation and very much aware of its implications. I think they'll change the regime in the next election, in which case we won't have to deal with it. But if we do, my guess is you're going to see rapidly escalating automobile prices and a reduced ability to purchase automobiles.
All right, fine. Well, I think that this is a very, very real factor, and they're talking about putting tremendous taxes on SUVs, and, you know, anything that they don't want you to do, they're just going to tax it, make so miserable, you're not going to be able to afford to do much of anything other than pay the taxes. And this is totally coercive legislation, and that's AB 1493, which is going to be the governor is supposed to act on here in the very near future.
Well, let me ask you this, Stan, because you're talking about taxes. And again, bear in mind, a measure to more than double the car tax is four votes away from getting to the governor's desk. It is the governor's bill. He wants it. He is vowed to sign it. Just for fun, how much did you pay in automobile taxes, if I might ask?
I really don't know. My wife pays all those bills, so I have no idea. But I will tell you, I'll be very unhappy if it doubles, that's for sure.
Well, I'll tell you, we paid my family paid $350 for our car tax last year. It's going to be $875 under this new bill. If you paid $200, your bill's going to be $500 next year. I was on a radio show a few days ago. Somebody calls and he says, well, he's got three cars in the family, one for him, one for his wife, and one for his grown daughter. And he's paying $1,000 a year in car taxes now. That bill's going to go up to $2,500.
So it's really over twice then.
Yes, it's about two and a half, actually exactly two and a half times what you're paying now. So if your folks out there are trying to get a feel for what this budget impasse means to you, it's this. If the budget goes through, take whatever you paid to the DMV, multiply it by two and a half, and that's what you'll be writing to the DMV next year.
Well, now tell me, are they going to be able to get this through? Will the Republicans be able to hang together, or are they simply going to bribe a couple of those four Republican Assembly members and get them to knuckle under it? Certainly they got one of the Republicans to knuckle under in the Senate, didn't they?
Yes, they did, and that's their MO. They are trying to bribe members with all sorts of goodies for their districts. But this time the Republicans are standing firm, and I think the reason they're standing firm is they realize this administration's crossed the line, not only in its ethical behavior, but also in its simple mismanagement of the state's finances. And we can't go down this road any longer. If this budget signed with the second biggest tax increase, with an average of $700 in direct and indirect taxes falling on an average family, that still doesn't cure the budget problem. We've got at least a $10 billion budget deficit next year, which means those taxes will continue to increase. And according to the Legislative Analyst's Office, we will have a total of $50 billion in budget deficits over the next 5 years. And that's if things don't get any worse.
Well, now, I thought you, as a law, you had to have a balanced budget. You couldn't have these deficit budgets. How do they get around the law?
Well, that should be the law. But what the Constitution requires only is that the proposal the governor introduces in January be balanced. And, of course, he's given complete discretion on how to balance it. One of the ways that this particular budget is balanced with an enormous number of bookkeeping gimmicks of exactly the variety that got Enron into trouble, that got WorldCom into trouble, and now have California in trouble. For example, they fantasize revenues. They're basing this this budget on an 18% growth in state revenues. Not going to happen. But as long as all they are required to do is estimate the revenues, and it doesn't matter if it's a good faith estimate or not. That's the bottom line. I mean, that's just one of the tricks they use. The tobacco settlement funds that are supposed to be paid 20 years from now, what they're doing is they're taking out a bond on that, heavily discounting what we should be getting in future budget years, and spending it all this year, which literally means that a child born today, 20 years from now, is going to be paying off this year's deficit. And again, that doesn't even cure the problem. We've got $50 billion of deficit staring us straight in the face if this budget passes.
Sounds to me like California is well on its way to bankruptcy.
I believe it is. And in fact, Daniel Weintraub, a columnist for the Sacramento Bee, issued exactly that warning a few days ago. And those who follow Weintraub's work know him to be one of the savviest budget watchers in the state of California.
All right, so really the only thing that can be done is hope that the Republican, those four Republicans that they need will hold fast in the Assembly, because one of the Republicans is already sold out. But if the rest of the Republicans hold tight, and of course the governor can't get a budget, then what happens? Will he negotiate with you? Is he going to hold tight and be stubborn and let the whole thing crumble?
Well, then we have to go back and actually negotiate a budget, which the governor's been unwilling to do. You know, between the Legislative Analyst Office and the Republican caucuses of the legislature, over $10 billion of spending reductions were proposed to this administration. They ignored them. And these are fairly simple reductions and painless reductions. For example, conforming the state's welfare eligibility standards to the federal Welfare Reform Act would save $1 billion a year. We pay $400 million a year for vacant staff positions that the bureaucracy simply uses gigantic slush funds. Simple reductions like that, the administration not only rejected them, they ignored them.
Well, it's a difficult time. I'm so glad that you're up there, Senator, and holding out. Do you want to say anything at all about your campaign for comptroller? You've mentioned, of course, how important that job is. Your website, TomMcClintock.com. What can people do to help you? Because this is not a highly publicized race, and yet it is one of the most important races in the state.
Well, again, it's the watchdog of the state treasury. The man I'm running against is being supported by all of the associations that represent the bureaucracy. I'm endorsed by every taxpayer organization in the state, so it's a pretty clear choice. There's a lot riding on it. Not only does this office have absolute authority to audit state expenditures, it has a statutory responsibility to prepare a blueprint every year for the downsizing of state bureaucracies, for streamlining their operations, for improving services, and for reducing costs. That is a responsibility that has simply been ignored in the now 28 years, that the Democrats have held this office. It is going to be the single most important tool that we will have to reorder the state's spending priorities and restructure the state service delivery system.
All right, so ladies and gentlemen, our guest today has been Senator Tom McClintock. He is running to be the state comptroller. It's a very, very important race. Do everything you can to help him. God bless you, Tom. Thank you so much for being with us.
And thank you for having me.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, that was Senator Tom McClintock, and it was on its cell phone. He's just really so busy. He's actually driving to San Francisco, but was willing to come along with us to bring us up to date on what's happening in Sacramento. We've talked to Senator Ray Haynes this week, but these things are vitally important. You need to know what's going on. And now, of course, everything that's happening today is part and parcel of a long-range plan. It was laid out in 1972 by the Club of Rome in a book called Limits of Growth. And, of course, you can go up on my website at RadioLiberty.com. We talk about this, a whole basic concept, and, of course, it ties into the electricity crisis. The electricity crisis was simply phony. It was created going along with that, driving up the price of electricity so you won't use so much electric power. That's what it's really all about. The idea, if you don't use the power, then we can take out the dams, we can do away with the generating plants, we can cut down on fossil fuel production, we can impoverish the American people. There is an agenda. If you haven't seen my sustainable development syllabus, we simply summarize the secret plan. You can get the Agenda 21 report by giving us a call at 1-800-544-8927. It's up to you to get the information. It's up to you then, of course, to tell others. It's up to you to be involved, and if not now, when? And if not you, who? And so until Monday at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you. Sweet!
available.